Okay, Parashat Chukas began with Paraduma, which is really the Parashat of Tumas Meis, which, Tumah and Tara sort of has a reputation that it's from the more boring parts of the Torah. How could you have an exciting shiur about Tumas Meis? So we're going to take that as a challenge. All right, listen to this. There's a Gemara in Nida, which all the way to the end, one of the last Gemaras in Shas. Nida, it starts in Daf Samach Tes, and it goes through Daf Ayin. And it's an amazing, really, really fascinating Gemara. The Gemara tells about how the people of Alexandria asked Rabbi Shimon Hananya 12 questions. And the Gemara goes through all 12, that's why it's a long piece of Gemara. But the Gemara says that the 12 questions were divided into four categories. Shloisha divrei chachma, shloisha divrei agada, shloisha divrei buris, v'shloisha divrei derech eretz. Those are the four categories. Divrei chachma means, kipshuta, it means really divrei Torah, inyanim and halacha that were discussed. Divrei agada also is pretty self-explanatory. Agadata inyanim. Buris was the third category. Shloisha divrei buris. Rashi says buris means shtus. Like a bur is ama aretz, right? And like bur yirei chet. So divrei buris means divrei shtus, Rashi says. And then the last category is a shloisha binyanei derech eretz. That's like secrets to success in life. That's actually the part of the Gemara that's most well known. Mayasa adam v'yechkom, mayasa adam v'yis asher. Those are from the shloisha divrei Derech Eretz that the Chachma Alexandria asked. The Divrei Chachma, which was the first category, those were really lumdish shailas on a variety of topics. The Divrei Agada includes some yisoidistic topics in, like they brought one pasuk in Navi that we're familiar with, we say in Ila Layachbites B'mais HaMais, but then another pasuk where it says that Hashem kills the chayte. How do you reconcile these pesukim? The pasuk says Yisa Hashem panav elacha, but there's another pasuk that says Sher lo yisa fanim. How do you reconcile these pesukim? Those are some of the divrei agada. So all the categories, I'm giving a little bit of a sampling of what they were about. But the one that I want to focus on is the shloisha divrei buris, the three questions of inyanei shtus that the Chachmei Alexandria asked. I don't know why anybody's taking this personally.
Why is everybody looking at me?
And the three questions in Divrei Buris that the Chachmei Alexandria asked all have to do with our parasha, with the topic of Tumas Meis. And they're all a little bit mysterious why exactly the Gemara called them Divrei Buris. But the questions are as follows. The first shaila that they asked, and the shloisha divrei buris was, Ishtei shaloit mahu shetetame. We know that of all the miseis meshunais, rachmano letzlan, that people have experienced in history, so one of the most bizarre deaths ever was Ishtei shaloit. She turned around when they were fleeing Sodom, vatehin etziv melech, she turned into a pillar of salt. So the people of Alexandria wanted to know, Does that pillar of salt have the din of a mace? La'inyan that it's matame, b'maga, b'masa, b'oyel. And Rabbi Shimon Hananya answered, mace ksiv, v'loy netziv melach. And netziv melach is not a mace. It's not matame. Okay? The second question they asked was, ben hashunamis, mahu shetame. Ben hashunamis, that's in the story of Elisha. Elisha, there was a woman that was a host to him, she made a room available for him, and then she got a bracha from him, and then she would have a child. The child grew up, and then one day he got sick, and he died. She went riding to Elisha, and she said, this child that you granted me with your bracha, he died. Elisha felt responsible, he came galloping back, and then it says that he took the child, he put him on his bed in that attic that she had, that room of Hachnas Zerchim that she had made available to him. He put the child on the bed in that room, and he put his face over his face, and he brought him back to life.
Right,
we read this in Haftarah, which parasha? Vayera, maybe? I'm not sure. But it's Haka Haftarah. So the Anshe Alexandria wanted to know. So now he gets off the bed. He gets right. Wow, I feel great. Right, he's back to life, and he walks away. His mother gives him a hug. Is he metame her? He was dead. So is he metame others now? B'maga b'masa. So Rabbi Shimon Hananya said that also. That was an easy question. It was a foolish question. Meisksiv v'loichai. He's walking around. He's alive. A living person is not dead. So that was the second question. Now, ironically, of course, everything else that was in the house was tameh, because he had been dead. While he was dead, he was metameh everything in the house. Right? So let's say if his mother was there in the house while Elisha was doing his magic, then she was tameh. But supposing that she stayed outside, now he got up off the bed, now we want to know, is he metameh others? Mikan lahaba, so that he said no. Meis k'siv v'loy chai. Okay, that's two.
The question could be tchis meis
mosa,
no?
So the third question actually comes to tchis meis. You're making a good point that l'chari this shaila could have been cleared about by tchis meisim. But listen to what happened. The third shaila was meisim la'asad lavai, meaning at the time of tchis meisim, are the meisim going to require hazas shlishi ushvi? That's what they asked. The Hazaz Shlishi Yushvi, so that's Parashah Paraduma. We know that when a person comes into contact with a mace, so we have something called Mechatas, which is the water that's mixed with a solution of the ashes of the Paraduma. And a person, after he becomes Tameh, so he counts 7 days, and on the third day and on the seventh day, he gets sprinkled with the water of the Paraduma, and then he goes to the mikveh, and that completes his entire process. The Mason Lasid Lava, because Baruch Hu is Mason Michai Kheil Barev Chaste, when that day comes, so people are going to step up out of their graves, are they going to need a Hazaz Shlishi Ushvi at that time? This is the third Shaila of Divrei Buris. Rabbi Shimon Hananya said to them, L'kishayichyu nechkamba. What are you bothering me for? When they come, when they get up, we'll think about it.
We'll deal with it then.
Yeah, we'll deal with it then. And then he says, the same, or another version of what he told them was, when they get up, Moshe Rabbeinu will be here. We'll ask him. So he brushed aside. It's interesting. The first two shailas, he answered. The third shaila, he brushes it aside. Like, oh, what if... I don't know. He doesn't say silly question. Well, the Gemara calls it Divrei Buris. We just see there, Bishum Hananya brushed the question aside. What's the answer to the question? It's not so clear. It wouldn't necessarily be so obvious, but the Gemara calls it Divrei Buris. It was a foolish question, and Bishum Hananya, what he said was, we'll worry about it later. Now, there's a Lamna Shakash on the Gemara, but which we'll get into shortly. But before we get into the Lamna, Tosis has a Kash on that Gemara. But before we get to Taisa's Kasha, something about Rabbi Shimon Hananya's answer. Rabbi Shimon Hananya said, they asked him a question, the Mason Lasalava, will they require Hazoas Gimel V'Zayin? Will they not require Hazoas Gimel V'Zayin? And he said, when they get up, we'll think about it. What did he mean to say about that? What's wrong with thinking about it now? Why is he brushing off the question? So, I don't know what the answer is, but I just a thought that what this piece of Gemara reminds me of is a very interesting quote from a Rambam. Rambam, in a letter, one of his most well-known letters, called Maimer Tchias HaMeisim. A little bit of background. The Rambam wrote the Maimer Tchias HaMeisim because he was in trouble. He had been called a kofer. By very prominent voices. There was the Rosh Yeshiva in Baghdad, right? The head of the Yeshiva of Bavel, which was the old Yeshiva's Pumpadisa, which had relocated to Baghdad. His name was Rosh Ben Eli, and he sent out letters, L'chol Tfutzes HaGoyla, that there's this rabbi in Egypt, and he wrote a scholarly work, but don't read him, don't get involved with him, because he's a kofer be'ikar. Which Iker was he a kofer in? Now, it's interesting. You know, we know that the Rambam was involved in all sorts of controversies. Later on, the Chachmei Ashkenaz were upset with him because he had because of his involvement with philosophy. That's not what Rav Shulman Eli was upset about. Rav Shulman Eli was upset that he's a kofer in the Iker of Tchias HaMeisim. Because when the Rambam in Hilchis Tshuva which is where he really does his main treatment of schar va'einesh and gemul that we have for our behavior, he leaves out tchias ha'meisim. He talks about the olam ha'neshamos, and he emphasizes that there is no guf, there's nothing physical, and he leaves out tchias ha'meisim. There's a ravid, oifen aret, the ravid, this is, I think, in Perek Tes, I think, maybe Ches or Tes of Hilchas Tshuva. The ravid over there, he writes that he writes this ha'ara, but more respectfully than Shmuel Maneli. He writes that, I don't understand how the Rambam could talk like this. It almost sounds as if he's denying Tchias HaMesim being a physical reality. But he didn't go so far as to call the Rambam a Kofer. The Ravid, with all the criticisms that he had of the Rambam, he never called the Rambam a Kofer. But there was this Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel, of Shmuel Maneli, who said the Rambam is a Kofer, the Rambam denies Tchias HaMesim, and we know it's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and he sent messages all around that the Rambam is a Kofer Baker.
He says, ain't bang, there's no difference between our lives today and the future. Doesn't the Rambam say that?
Yes, but no, but that's about the
Mashiach.
The days of Mashiach, which may or may not be the same days as this. But you, okay, it could be that is relevant. That is one of the comments the Rambam makes about Lasa Lava. That's true. So the Rambam responded to this. It's interesting. He wrote his response. Maybe he would have just ignored it. You know, people are saying this about him, so they're saying about him. Okay, he was bigger than that. Maybe he would have ignored it. But he got a letter from the Kehillah in Taman, and this was a Kehillah that was particularly dependent on the Rambam, and because he really years earlier he had sent them. A lot of chizuk, and he felt an achrayus towards them. He was their hero. They felt like he gave them their whole chiyus as a kehillah, and now they sent him a letter. We don't know what to think. You know, we know that you're like our superstar Talmud Chacham Gadol Batayra, and then we got this letter from a very, very fancy stationery. I mean, he says he's the Rosh Yeshiva of Bavel. That's the most prestigious stellar in the world. And he says, you're a kaifer. So what is it? Are you a kaifer? Are you a good guy? Are you a bad guy? So the Rambam wrote back to the people in Taman, and this is called the Maimer Tchias HaMesim. And in the letter, the Rambam says that I'm very offended that he thinks I don't believe in Tchias HaMesim. He criticized me. He says I'm a kaifer be'ikr because Tchias HaMesim is one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. Well, hello, who made up the Yud Gimel Ikrim? That's me, right? We get the Yud Gimel Ikrim from the Rambam. I'm the one that said that Tchias HaMesim is one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. True, not in this sefer I wrote that, in a different sefer, but if somebody is really reading all of my works, he would not have any doubt that I believe in Tchias HaMesim. But that being said, he was onto something. He noticed that in Perek Ches or Tes of Hilchas Tshuva, which was the place where he would have thought that I should have mentioned it. I didn't mention it. And again, even people that were not really looking to knock the Rambam also had this kasha on the Rambam. How come the Rambam doesn't mention Tchias HaMesim over there? And the Rambam says, I did that deliberately. Meaning, I believe in Tchias HaMesim, and he even says that if you read carefully, not only in my Yud Gimel Ikrim, which he writes in the Pirush HaMishnayos, but even in the Yad HaChazakah, there are two places, he says, where I do mention Tchias HaMesim. So I believe in Tchias HaMesim, but it's true that I left it out in certain places because I was looking to downplay it. And the reason why I was looking to downplay it is because I think that while it's a yesod of our amuna, but I think it gets overrated. Because really, like the Rambam, the ikur gemul that Hashem is going to give us for our mitzvahs and our aveiros is really for the neshama. The true gemul comes to the neshama, and that's in the olam haneshamos. There is such a thing as tchias ha'meisim with gufim. That's like the Rambam. That's a prat. For whatever reason, Hashem felt that part of this, one of the stages in the process towards the eventual perfect tikkun, involves restoring the neshama to the gufim. But that's really a preliminary stage. It's not the ultimate stage. But the Rambam writes, but people don't really think of it that way. I see again and again that the simple people, they're much more interested in Tchias HaMesim than they are in the Olam HaNeshamos because they find it more relatable. And Zuck the Rambam, and this is a quote, Zuck the Rambam, I hear the people asking foolish questions like, when Tchias HaMesim comes, are the mason going to get up with clothes or without clothes? Because, you know, you bury somebody in shrouds, but the shrouds are gone in, you know, a short time. So are the mason going to get up naked? So like the Rambam, it's a foolish question. And why? It's very similar, right, to this Gemara that says, Divrei Bur, it's a foolish question. The Rambam doesn't say it's a foolish question because the answer is obvious. He doesn't tell us whether he thinks that, I think he thinks that he has no idea whether they're going to have clothes or they're not going to have clothes. He just thinks that it's foolish to be preoccupied with it. That's what the Rambam says, that it's the more simple folk that are so preoccupied with Tchias HaMesim and don't realize that the Ikur Gemol is in the Olam HaNeshamais, and therefore I was looking to downplay it, and that's why I didn't give it this, as much treatment as you might have expected. This Gemara, B'Shur Mechananya, who says to them, they had a question, which was actually a less foolish question than the question. I mean, this is a more sophisticated question. Are the mason going to be metame, or are they not going to be metame? Are they going to, or are they going to require, not metame, that was the previous question. They're not going to be metame. But are they going to require Hazaz Gimel V'Zayin, Shlishi U'Shvi? To that he says, when it happens, we'll worry about it. It sounds like this Rambam, that I don't think that we should be preoccupied with these questions. So this Gemara is maybe a shiggle of a makar to that Rambam. Incidentally, that Rambam is controversial. Many Mishnayim argue that which the Rambam sets up, this is a discussion for another time, perhaps, but just, I guess if I'm mentioning this Rambam, I should point out that the Ramban in the Shaar Gemul argues against the Rambam. He doesn't accuse him of anything. There's no kfirah. The Rambam perfectly well answered his critics. He's not a kofri, believes in Tchias HaMesim. But that which the Rambam said, that Tchias HaMesim is a smaller step. It's an earlier stage. It's not the ultimate. The Ramban disagrees. The Ramban says that actually, for Keret, the neshama with the guf is actually the ultimate and perfect stage. And what we call the Olam HaNeshamos, where the neshama goes after a person dies, that's just like a holding station, because now it's not yet the time of Tchias HaMesim. So that's a very sadistic machlek, is Rambam and Ramban in deep in Yoni Emuna. Right? But that's not our topic for today. But again, but the Rambam in the Maimon Tchias HaMesim, he has this line about how people are too preoccupied with Tchias HaMesim and they ask foolish questions and they're not important. This Rabbi Shmuel Hananya very much resembles that Rambam.
Does the Torah mention
Tchias HaMesim?
No.
Yeah, that's
true.
But the Torah never mentions it lahedya, but there's a few places where Chazal say mitan remez l'tchias meisim in haTorah. Like for example, az yashir Moshe yashir in the future tense. Zok Rashi mitan remez Rashi quoting Chazal mitan remez l'tchias meisim. There's a few places in the Torah where there's a remez l'tchias meisim in haTorah. Okay, now coming back to the Gemara, had asked first. They had a couple of questions about whether certain individuals are mitame tumas meis. Ishtei Shaloit, Ben Ashunamis, are they Metami Tumas Meis? And Rabbi Shmuel Hananya said, no, they're not Metami Tumas Meis. Then their third question was not about being Metame, like to be Metame others, but whether the individual is himself Tame, to require Hazaz Shlishi Ushvi. And that question was phrased, was presented regarding the Mason La'asad Lavai. Frek Toises Akasha. Why did he switch to the Mason La'asad Lavai? He was just talking a second ago about the Ben Ashunamis. He wanted to know about the Ben Ashunamis. Is he Metame? Is he not Metame? When he goes and gives his mother a hug, does his mother become Tame? Now, the question about whether the Mason, after they get up, need Hazaz Shlishi Ushvi, let's ask that question about the Ben Ashunamis. Did the Ben Ashunamis require Hazaz Shlishi Ushvi after he got up? Why did they switch to the Mason La'asad Lavai? It's the same mitzvahs, right? You're talking about a Tchias HaMesim. So you just asked one shayla about what happens after Tchias HaMesim. You have another shayla. Ask it in the same setting, the Ben Hashanamit. Taisus is Kasha. Why didn't they ask the third shayla about Hazaz Shlishi Ushvi regarding the Ben Hashanamit? So now. How would that affect this? No. Tomo Chabatsibur would mean that it wouldn't be forbidden to bring a carbon at that time, but it doesn't mean that we don't have to deal with the Tumma. When the whole Tzibur is Tumma, the whole Tzibur needs to go through the Tara process.
Did
Menai
Yisrael go to the Mikvah before Har Sinai?
Yeah.
They did?
Yeah. That's the Gemara in Yabamas. Yeah. Mem Vav, Mem Zayin. Okay, so Taisus asks the kasha. Before we learn Taisus' answer, there's a very, very interesting Tshuva Chacham Sofer. And the Tshuva is fascinating from beginning to end. And one of the paragraphs he addresses that he has his own terrace of this kasha of Taisus. So I'm going to say over this Tshuva Chacham Sofer. This is in Yerideus and Shin Lamed Zayin. He begins with a maisa. When the stomach sent him the following real life story. A person was taking a walk with a guy in the guy's estate. This was a guy, a tsar, who had a nice big estate, and this Jew was friendly with the tsar, and they were taking a walk in his, he had woods, he had fields, they were taking a walk in his estate, and they came to a slab of stone and that was lying on the ground, and when they got closer, he looks at it, and he sees it says, in Yiddish, Oisiyos, Poi Nitman, it had a name, I think it was Yedidya ben Zechariah, or maybe Zechariah ben Yedidya. Nifter be'erev Yom Kippurim, Shnas Kuf Nuntes. Now, Shnas Kuf Nuntes, Erev Yom Kippurim, that's 1398. The year 1398. Now, this Shaila arose in the year 1815. So this person is walking along, and he sees this really ancient tombstone, and he was shocked because as far as he knew, this was a fairly new Jewish community, that there were no Jews here more than 100 years earlier. That's what it says, that was their working assumption. And he asked the guy, what is this? He said, oh, sure. I know, you know, we have a tradition in our family that this whole area over here where we have this estate used to be a Jewish cemetery, and our castle and estate was built upon a Jewish cemetery from many years ago. How many years ago? I don't know, but you could read the tombstone. And it said over there, again, Kuf Nun Tes. So 1398. So then the Shaila rose. Here the guy is saying that this whole area used to be a Jewish cemetery, so does that mean it's us for Kahanim to go there? He himself was a Kayin. This person who was a friend of the Tsar, and he used to visit him sometimes, and here the Tsar just told him, oh, this whole area used to be a Jewish cemetery. So what's the status now? So the Chassam Sefer, responded, and I'm going to work backwards. I'm going to tell you the end first, even though that part's not negated to our shir, but just what was the bottom line of his discussion on Lachal Maisa? He told him you don't have to worry about it. He said you could dismiss what this guy said, and not because he's a guy, that wasn't even an issue, the guy was Mestir Chafitumai, but you could just dismiss it because I'm not really hearing anything over here that makes enough of a reason to be chayshesh. We had an assumption that this is a fairly new Jewish community. Okay, what happened today? The guy said that he heard from his father, and that it's a tradition in the family, meaning he heard from his father, and his father heard from his father. Okay, so, you know, somebody saying that I heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from someone that there used to be Jews here.
But it's just not so much.
But there were Gleimud. Obviously, there's a tombstone there. It's an ancient tombstone. So to that, Zakta Sam Seifer, there could be more than one reason why there's a tombstone somewhere. Maybe there was a tombstone factory over here. And this stone, for whatever reason, 400 years ago, we can't reconstruct the story, this tombstone never got delivered to its destination. It doesn't have to be that this was the cemetery. We only found one tombstone, right? We didn't find hundreds. There's a tombstone here. Okay, a tombstone is not a riot that it was a cemetery. And the fact that somebody says that I heard from somebody who heard from somebody, that also is not a riot to anything. So I don't really hear anything. If we have a chazaka that there was no cemetery over here, nothing happened in this story. That was his bottom line. After he went through a few lumdisha svaras, why to be mindful, he ended up saying there's just no there there. There's nothing, there isn't enough to make a real yidus hasafik. Okay, that's its conclusion.
The rhyme is all through Dibur. I mean, the fact that we know, right, I'm saying that how do we always know? Because my father told my father.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, but that okay. But that's Yiddin. First of all, it's Yiddin. No, but more than that, that's people giving over to their children their whole essence of who they are. But this is like, you know, I'm saying this is not the essence of who they were, that there was, it used to be a Jewish, you know, cemetery over here. This is like, I don't know, you know, if I say that, you know, I have a Maseri in my family that, you know, that we once had a great uncle that fought in the Civil War. Okay, maybe we did, maybe we didn't, but it's not a central to our identity of who we are. Right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Civil War is only 150 years ago.
Right.
You know, Shtel Zachar.
Family Minhagim, I mean, family Minhagim, you know, that's not, it doesn't create the essence of who they are. He wears a talus like this, he wears this, you know.
Yeah, okay, right, but so do we paskin halachas based on such things? We don't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So the Kayan doesn't come to me.
Right, so he said, the Kayan could go here. That was the Chassam Sofer's Pesach. But he
from then on, not just. From
then on, the Kohanim. Yeah, he allowed the Kohanim to continue to go there. Mm-hmm. He does say in the last sentence that something about how if somebody wants to be extra machmir, what did he say? Something about how maybe you could, he wrote something maybe about how making a little bit of an excavation to, I don't remember. He does say something. He clearly said that it's not necessary, but something about how if somebody wants to be more machmir, he makes a suggestion, Ayin Sham. Okay, but at the beginning of the Teshuvah...
Where it was?
What? No, it doesn't say where it was. It doesn't say where it was.
If he wants to make an excavation, then he could just take a shovel and check.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. If,
that's right.
If,
that's what he was saying, to check.
Yeah. I don't remember. I don't remember.
To go around it.
I mean, over there to do some exploring by digging down and see what you find. But I don't remember what exactly he says to do, so I ayin sham. But earlier in the tshuva, before he came to this, he had a tzad to be matured as follows. He says, you know, let's imagine worst case scenario. Let's say it's true. Everything that the guy said is true, and there used to be a real Jewish cemetery over here. But it's 400 years ago. What happens to Kfarim in 400 years? So they buried Mason here, and the Mason disintegrated. And now there's nothing left. Maybe we could say, how long does a Mason remain there? So, you know, he wasn't using scientific methods of answering that question, how long does a Mason remain over there underground? But he said, you know, we know there's an idea that Mason do disintegrate and return to dust, for obviously first the flesh and then eventually the bones. 400 years is a very long time. So maybe that's enough of a basis to be matirat.
We're not annoyed that way because that Kvar Mitzvah.
So, right. So the Chassam Sofer says that.
Oh, that's also true.
Okay, that's a separate issue. That's a separate issue. The Chassam Sofer, after. So he says exactly like you. After he raises that possibility, he rejects it. And he says that we know from a Gemara that we can't rely on that because there's a Gemara, Nida, Daf Samach Aleph. It's just a 7-8 blot earlier than the first Gemara. Nidav Samach Aleph, the Gemara over there tells a story about how Rabbi Shur ben Hananya, ironically, it's the same Amayra, the same Amayra that we were talking about at the beginning of the story with Chachmei Alexandria. Rabbi Shur ben Hananya found a bar malei atzamais, and those atzamais were identified as being from the days of Yishmael ben Nesanya, who was the person who assassinated Gedaliah ben Achikam of Tzayim Gedaliah fame, and there was a whole massacre, and the whole remnant, the Sheiris HaPleita that was left in Eretz Yisrael was killed out then, and those Atzamais were in this bar that Rabbi Shimon Hananya uncovered. Shimon Hananya is a Tana, so it's many centuries after, right? I think he makes a cheshbon over there, he says it comes out, I think he said to 700-800 years, something like that. Longer than the period of time that we're talking about, and the Atzamis were still there. So apparently, the Gemara is telling us that we can't rely on the bones all disintegrating. And then in that connection, he brings the Gemara in Shabbos. So I don't know how well known the Gemara is, but certainly if you're a camp counselor and you ever need like campfire stories, this is the top Gemara. Or campfire story. The Gemara now really is. I'm going to tell over this Gemara, even though we don't have a campfire here. I'm going to tell over this Gemara.
Turn the lights.
Yeah. We're going to. I want to be makdim that there's a Marsha in this Gemara that explains very. The Marsha in Chedushei Agadais explains on a much deeper level what's going on over here. He has a a big yisayid about that there's three chalakim of a person's avoda, ben adam la'akam, ben adam la'chaveri, ben adam la'atzmai, and he connects that with the shleisha shutfim ba'adam, the father and the mother, and a kadosh baruch hu, and he explains each step in this gemara working through those three inyanim. But, okay, so there's a lot, like, we know any time that we learn a gemara, there's a lot more there than meets the eye. But I'm going to, but for our purposes, I'm just going to tell over the gemara as it's written. Shabbos daf kuf nun beis amud beis. The gemara brings a statement of, an amayra Rav Mari, Amar Rav Mari, asidim tzadikim lachzer la'afram. Tzadikim all disintegrate. Meaning even tzadikim, eventually they disintegrate. So Rav Nachman had his landscapers that were digging in the... in his property, and when they were digging, and they heard a cough coming from downstairs. They were digging, and they heard, you know, there was just them there, and they were all digging in silence, and they heard a cough, like somebody clearing, sort of, so they went running to Rav Nachman, and they said, there's somebody coughing in your yard. So Rav Nachman came out and said, okay, show yourself. And the person said, my name is Rav Yoshi Bar Achoy. I'm sorry, Rav Achoy Bar Yoshi, I think. My name is Rav Achoy Bar Yoshi. Nachman said, Rav Achoy Bar Yoshi. But don't you know that Rav Mari said a seed? Rav Achoy Bar Yoshi, you died a long time ago. Don't you know that Rav Mari said a seed in Tzadik and Lachz and Afram? So he said, well, excuse me, I don't feel beholden to Rav Mari. So Rav Mari said so, but here I am. So Rav Nachman said, he continues his conversation, he says, but Rav Mari brought a pasuk. The pasuk in Koheles. The pasuk says, "V'yashuv ha'afar el ha'adam kishahaya." I think that's the lashon of the pasuk. "V'yashuv ha'afar el ha'aretz kishahaya." It's a pasuk in Koheles. Rav Nachman called out. So this Rav Achoy Bar Yoshia said back, "So you think you're so smart because you know Koheles? Well, whoever taught you Koheles obviously didn't teach you Mishlei." Because there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says there are kavat samois kina, that what causes the bones to disintegrate is jealousy. So somebody that lives a life with jealousy, his bones disintegrate. And I, thank you very much, I didn't live a life with jealousy, and so my bones are alive and well. Then the Gemara tells us that Rav Nachman, and this is not for the faint of heart, again, campfire material, Rav Nachman went and felt him to see if there was mamashus there. I think nowadays, right, we would talk about, you know, there are ghosts and there are mummies. He wanted hologram.
Hologram.
Okay.
I'm supposed to be in my basement by myself.
He wanted to see which one he was, right? Is this a ghost or a mummy? He felt him to see if there was mamashus. And he saw there was mamashus. So he said, I see you're rather substantial. Why don't you come home? And you have to see the Marsha. The Marsha explains what's going on in each step of this Shak Levitaria. But Rav Nachman said to Rav Achoy Bar Yoshia, why don't you come home? So Rav Achoy Bar Yoshia, continuing to sort of mock Rav Nachman, he said, oh, now I see you don't even know Navi. Because before we were talking about Ksuvim, right? Mishlei Koheles. So now I see you don't even know Navi. The Pasuk says in Yecheskel, Ani Hashem bepischis kiver seichem, that only I, Hashem, open the graves. Until Hashem opens my grave, I'm staying here. So Rav Nachman said, okay. Rav Nachman said, but you know, one second. I'm still bothered there's a pasuk. I tried my pasuk in Koheles, you slugged me up, but there's a pasuk in Bereishis. Afer ata ve'el afer tashuv. So what do you say to that? So to that, Rav Achoy Bar Yoshi said, oh, that pasuk, that means Shah Achas Lefnei Tchiya. The last moment before Tchiyas HaMeisim, everybody returns to Afar. But until then, Rekavat Samois Kina, and Misha Einlai Kina doesn't return to Afar. That's the Gemara, Shabbos, Kufnun Beis. So, Zok Tichsam Sofer, this Zechariah ben Yedidya, or again, Yedidya ben Zechariah, I don't remember, but that was mentioned on that tombstone from 1398. He says, let's give him a cheskes kashrus, that he's not in the category of a kavat somois kina. So his bones are still there. We have to assume that his bones are still there. So we can't be moderate on the basis that everything's disintegrated. Now this, as you mentioned before, so that which, you know, we visit very ancient kvarim, but kohanim don't go inside. You go to kever rachum, but kohanim don't go inside. That even though, you know, one might have said Oh, but it's so long ago, isn't everything disintegrated? That's based on this Gemara, that if it's tzaddikim, then we assume that, or even, with the Cheskes Kashrus, you can't be assured that everything is disintegrated until La'asad Lavai, Ashal Lefnei Tchias HaMesim.
What's
Pasuk with tzaddikim? The only tzaddikim? The Lashon of the Pasuk in Mishlei is Kavat Kina.
That no, it's the other one, the moment that tzaddikim. That only tzaddikim turn into afar?
Asidim tzaddikim lachzor la'afram. That's the statement of Rav Murray at the beginning of the Gemara. Asidim tzaddikim lachzor la'afram. They'll return to dust.
Only tzaddikim?
No, not no, only. No, it means even. It means even. It's even. So Chazam Sofis now, incidentally, we all know that, I don't know exactly where it comes from, but it's widely said over, and it's a midrashim, that there is a bone that never disintegrates. Right? The Luz bone, it's also referred to in some midrashim as the Naskui bone. That's what the Chazam Sofis calls it. The Chazam Sofis says, you know, when he had first declared that maybe we can be makel because it's so many years and Mistama they disintegrated. So he said right away, what about the Luz bone or the Naskoi bone? So he said, the truth is that we wouldn't be Mitami, we wouldn't ask for the Gehanim just for that, because a little bone is not Mitami ba'oyel. It's only Mitami b'mago b'masa. When you go to a cemetery, you know, as long as you just stay above ground and you don't meet any of these Ravach Var Yoshia, you're not going to get involved with Maga and Masa, right? It's just Oyel. In order for at some ways, you need a Rav Minyan, you need a skeleton, a substantial amount of a skeleton. One tiny little piece of bone is not going to be Mitami Ba'oyel. So that's why those Midrashim that the Luz were not really relevant over here. But this Gemara in Shabbos that says that there's really no assurance of decomposition until the Shal of Ne'atchia, so that makes it that we can't be matter on the basis of assuming that the people that the Mason disintegrated. So therefore, the Chazam Sofer said this is not a basis to be matter. He would have asked, but then eventually he said that, like we said before, there's no there. There wasn't really a Leidas Hasafik. Now, but in that section of the Tshuva where he was talking about, if we're in this Gemara in Shabbos, that we don't assume that Atzama is disintegrate until the Shoach is Lefnei Atchia. Zok Tachsam Sefer, with this, we have a Teretz that Tosfos is Kasha in Nida. To go back to the Gemara that we started, the Gemara said, right, these Chachmei Alexandria, first they asked about the Ben Ashunamis, is he Mitami? When he gets up, is he Mitami? And Rabbi Shuv Mechanayim said, no. He's not Mitami. Chai v'loi meis v'loi chai. He's not Mitami. Then they had another question. The Mason la'asad lavoi, do they require a zoaz shlishi u'shvi? And he said, ooh, that's an interesting question, but I'm not answering you now. That question, why are they asking about the Mason la'asad lavoi? Frek Tosis, why didn't they ask that about the Ben Hashanamis? You're talking about the Ben Hashanamis. You just discussed whether he's Mitami or others. Now discuss whether he needs a zoaz shlishi u'shvi. Why did you jump to the other Mason? Zok Tachsam Sefer, the answer is simple. Because the Ben Hashanamis, of course he requires Shlishi Shvi. He was, a minute ago, he was lying on the bed, dead. So at that time, he was Avi Avos HaTumah. And now he got up, but his Tumah didn't go anywhere. He's Tummy like before. Even though we say that he's not Mitame others now, meaning because now he has no Siba to be Tame, he's not a Mace, right? His first question was, Mace V'loi Chai. But he the tumah that was already chal on him is still there because he was a mace just before. So he would require hazash lishu shvi because he was a corpse a minute ago. They were only asking their shaila about the mason lost at lavai because the mason lost at lavai they disintegrate entirely before they get up. So you can't say, well, a minute ago you were avia b'satumah. No. A minute ago there was nothing there. And then it's almost yesh me'ayin, not mamash yesh me'ayin, there's the luz, right? But then there's a creation of a body that comes out. This body wasn't a tummy mace a minute ago. This body wasn't there a minute ago. So there's a shayla. Does he need hazah or does he not need hazah? But the Ben Hashanamis for sure needed hazah because he was a corpse. When he was a corpse, he was tummy, and now the same body came back to life, but it was tummy already. So it's for sure going to need a hazah shlishi shvi. That's the Chazam Sofer's teretz.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
Why didn't they ask that child about, I forgot the case in the Gemara where, which Tana killed the other Tana?
Rabbi Zeira.
Yeah, he was dead also, wasn't he?
Why didn't they ask about that case? Okay,
that
well, was maybe because that one they didn't take so literally. I think we actually talked about that Purim time. Yes. I mentioned the Marsha says Chas v'Shalom not to take that Gemara literally, but the Ben Hashanamis Gemara we take literally. I mean, that's a
Sukkim. Maybe halachah l'maisa, can a Kohen go into, or a Kohen, you know, a Kohen doesn't go to the basic verse.
Right.
Can Kohen go into a concentration camp?
I don't know why you mean.
What, because you could say
the Mason are were
there
all
no
over
Mason.
There.
There are no Mason there anymore.
Yeah, but he was burnt. And...
You mean because of the cremations? No, that's not Matame at all.
What's the problem of a going?
So a
going
go,
to a cemetery.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, unless you mean that you're supposing that people would dying and then just. Falling, you
no,
know,
because
the cremation, that's not matame at all.
What's the problem of a coin going into a cemetery? The tummy comes out?
Right.
Yeah.
It does? Even though it's in a box, in a coffin?
So, no, so that's actually not so partial. There's the Gemara, Brachas Tafites, and elsewhere about a Pesach Tefach, there's a Pesach Tefach, then that would be mafsik.
Right.
Okay, that's a good... Well, historically, we didn't bury in boxes.
And in Eretz Yisrael, they don't bury in a box.
Right, historically, we didn't bury in boxes. But, bury in boxes, the box disintegrates very quickly. Mm-hmm. But that's a good shiloh. But, let's leave that aside. I don't know if I can make, maybe we can make a shir about it, but I don't know if we can make an exciting shir about that. But on this, we have an exciting shir.
There's the Gemara about Mason speaking in Brachas.
Yes, right. There's a Gemara in Brachas also about ghosts.
Yeah,
yes, Yeah, that's the second best campfire Gemara.
I think one of the recent Daf Yomi Gemaras, one of those, they had a whole thing about someone coming back to life and they're burying him in the wrong direction.
Underground.
Okay.
Because they used to bury people sideways or standing up.
Okay, I don't remember. Is that Chagiga? Maybe.
Yeah,
okay. All right. So the Chassam Sofer says that with this we have a teretz to taste this kasha, but what's interesting is that his bottom line, meaning what's the din of the Ben Hashanamis? Does he need Hazor Shlishi Yishvi? The Chassam Sofer is saying that he believes yes, he's a corpse. He's an Aviyah Beis HaTumah. He's not a corpse anymore, but he was an Aviyah Beis HaTumah, and now he just got up, but he's still what he has the tumah that he had. He needs Hazor Shlishi Yishvi. That's what the Chassam Sofer is assuming would be the din for the Ben Hashanamis. Again, the Gemara doesn't discuss whether the Ben Hashanamis needs Hazor Shlishi Yishvi. The Gemara only discusses the Meisim L'Asad Lavi. Frek Tezis, why not discuss the Ben Hashanamis? So the Chassam Sofer's answer is that for the Ben Hashanamis, it's Pashut, that yes, he needs Hazor Shlishi Yishvi. Now we're ready to go back to Tosfos. Tosfos says the exact opposite. Tosfos' answer, when Tosfos says, why did the Gemara only clear the Shaila about the Meisim L'Asad Lavi, not by the Ben Hashanamis? Because the Ben Hashanamis would be for sure no, does not require Hazor Shlishi Yishvi. The only, right, Mamash L'Hepach from the Chassam Sofer. The Shaila was about the Meisim L'Asad Lavi, and Zok Tosfos, Tosfos has a really very creative reading of the Gemara. Tosfos says the only reason why they were claiming about the Meisim L'Asad Lavi is because there's a pasuk in Yecheskel that says v'zarachti aleichem mayim tahirim u'tahartem, that it says that L'Asad Lavi I'm going to sprinkle purifying waters upon you. So that's a nevuah. Now that has nothing to do with the paraduma, right? That's not paraduma water. That's just some kind of water that Hashem is going to sprinkle. And the Gemara is asking a shayla about that nevuah that it says that Allah Subhanahu wa Taala is going to sprinkle water upon us. Is that going to be a one-time sprinkling, just poof, and that's the Tara? Or does that require a seven-day process with two installments like the Paraduma? Is there a Hazor Shlishi Yishvi in the sprinkling of the Mayim Tahirim of the Navi Yecheskel, Zorak Lecha Mayim Tahirim V'Tahartem? Does that have a process of Shlishi Yishvi or not? So when the Gemara said, Meizim L'Asad Lavoi, Tzrichim Hazor Shlishi Yishvi or not, it was not a shayla about Paraduma at all. It was a shayla about the Vizarakti Lecha Mayim Tahirim V'Tahartem. Does that have a process of Shlishi Yishvi? But Paraduma? For sure not. And therefore, the Ben Ashunamis, since he was not subject to that nevuah of Zerakti Aleichem Mayim Tahayrim, so there was no shaila about him, about Hazah Shlishi Ushvi. Which means that none of these Mesim require what we usually call Hazah Shlishi Ushvi, meaning the treatment of the Paraduma water. Tais is assuming that that was Pasha to the Gemara, that both the Ben Ashunamis and the Mesim Lasalavai do not need to be sprinkled with the Paraduma water. Chassam Sefer was assuming that the Ben Ashunamis would have to. Tesis says that no, he wouldn't have to.
What Chassam Sefer does with Tesis?
What?
What does the Chassam Sefer
do? He's giving a different teretz. He's giving a different teretz. It's like out of the Indian. He doesn't mind giving a different teretz. But the other thing is, what's Takab Shad and Tesis? Why this, the Ben Ashunamis, he was an Aviyah by Satumah. He was as tummy as it gets. And then, okay, then we fixed him. Now he no longer has a Siba for Tumah. But the tumor that was on him already, why would it disappear? Why would Taisa say that this Ben Ushanamis does not need, meaning he can now walk into the Beis HaMikdash, he doesn't need to get Azah Shlishi Ushvi before he goes into the Beis HaMikdash. Why not? Taisa doesn't explain why. Taisa is just explaining what's the chiluk between the Ben Ushanamis and the Mason Lasad Lava. Oh, because the Mason Lasad Lava is a Vizrak Yalechem Ayim Tahirim with the Hartim, and on that there's a shayla of whether it needs Shlishi Ushvi. But the Ben Ushanamis doesn't have that. But why you don't need the Paraduma treatment, Taisus doesn't explain why. Taisus just indicates that he held for Devar Pasha that the Ben Ushanamis does not need the Paraduma. So what's Takawa? Okay, right, it is a chayk. But Taisus shouldn't be making new chukim on top of the old ones. So what's Pshat in this Taisus?
Maybe the child never died.
Said he died.
So,
what? It was unconscious, but they don't know.
Okay, but Taisus is definitely working with the assumption that we take the psukim over there, Kipshutam, that the Ben Ushanamis was dead. That's the assumption of that Gemara, for sure.
It's clearly not Trias HaMesim that how yeah. We understand in the future Trias HaMesim is gonna happen.
Well, we can't, no, right? But the Novi clearly says he was dead and he brought back to life.
Yeah, right, Novi says it's not the Trias HaMesim that we're all focused on.
A man can't perform
what?
A man cannot.
Yeah, it's only the Rosh one that can perform that Trias HaMesim.
Only Kadosh Baruch Hu can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
What would make him tummy?
How can a man do Trias HaMesim?
I can't answer that. I'm not the kind of man that can. But
does that have to do with Amunah? I mean, can a man do Trias HaMesim?
The pasuk says that Elisha had that. Elisha and Eliyahu both had that koyach. Yeah. So now,
his wife again? If he was
okay? That's a good question. He was grabbed a little boy. But they talk about such questions. They talk about such questions to consider a new person.
He is a shtick. So that's
what we want to focus on. We're really now, just now, up to the real focus, the lamdisha focus of this year. This chiddush of Taisvis that the Ben Ushanamis does not need Azaz Shlishi Ushvi. He's not Tamei. So what would be the hesber? Why is he not Tamei? So Achrayim want to connect this Taisvis to a medrash in the beginning of Parshas Chukas. It's in the Sefri Zuta, which is not the primary Sefri, but it's like a second Medrash Halacha that we have on Bamidbar. It's called the Sefri Zuta. And over there it says the following. On the Pasuk, Hanegeb, Emezich Hol Nefesh Adam, Yitma Shiv As Yamim. That's the Pasuk that teaches us to Masmaga that Emez is Metamei. The Medrash says, Hanegeb, Emez Tamei, Ve'ein Hamez Atzmoy Tamei. Emez is not Tamei. A mace is mitame, but he is not tame. A dead body is not tame. We call it a via vaisa tuma as an expression. Yeah, it's the source of all tuma, but it's not actually tame. And that's what the Medrash says. So Achrenim say, in light of that, we can understand this taisvis. A mace, his whole koyach is that he's mitame others, but he was never tame. Now he came back to life. And so, you know, there's no reason why he should. If that's true, that makes atzmei enei tamei, then there's no reason why he should need a zash lishu shvi. That seems to be a good hesber and taisvis. The paraduma. This is reminiscent of that enigma of the paraduma that it's mitamei as a tahirim and mitahir as a tameim. So this is right. Also, there would seem to be something very enigmatic that it's mitamei everything, and you're right, it has such a strong koyach to be mitamei, and yet hu atzmei enei tamei.
So why can't a kohen go to a base kvaris?
Because they're matame, the mesim are matame.
Only if you touch them.
No. Maga, masa, and oil. Mesim matame in three ways. Maga, masa, and oil.
So it's not two mesim together.
The Chassam Sefer. Right. The truth is, it's interesting you asked that. I was taking a liberty. I was oversimplifying a little bit. The Chassam Sefer, when he said that the Ben Hashanah is Metame, he didn't even say, the way Art presented it was because he was just a corpse, and so he was Tame, and where did his Tumah go? The Chassam Sefer says it in a more lomdish way, and it could be that it's because he was also being Nachasadis. The way the Chassam Sefer said it was, that at the moment that he was transitioning from dead to alive, he was negea ba'atzmai. That's what the Chassam Sefer said, which almost sounds like he might have also been working with this assumption. But he was touching himself and transmitting. But let's put that aside. This is Al-Kapana as Pshat in the Taisus. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky, in his Shiurim on Bava Basra, Daf Yutes, there's a lot of Tumas Meis Reid, Bava Basra, Daf Yutes over there. It's an Eish Chav Zayin. Rav Shmuel Rozovsky says that this, he thinks, is the Pshat in this Taisus. He says it, he actually goes so far as to say that he thinks it's been doing it in a Rambam. It's a little bit complicated. There's a Rambam that says about it that the mace itself is tahar, but the Rambam is saying it about a pachas mikazayis of a mace, which is where it doesn't have the shear to mevatame others. And Shmuel Rozovsky is saying that what the Rambam really means is that a mace is always not tame. A mace is, by definition, tahar, just when there's a shear there of being mevatame others, then we call it Tameh in the sense that it's Matameh others. But really, the mace itself is always Tahar. That's why he's Medayak from this. There's a Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Mace, Perek Gimel, Halacha Tesvav. And he says that, so the Rambam is also holding the same way. But Al Kaponim Bedas, the Tosfos, he says, the Tosfos, we have a clear Hesber based on this Sefri Zuta. The Tosfos, I mean, that's really would seem to be the most straightforward nafkamina from this Sifri Zuta, where it says a mace is not tame. Well, my nafkamina, we know that it's matame everything. So what's really the difference whether you call it tar or you call it tame? If the mace himself comes back to life, then what's its own status? And Tosfos seems to take the position that it does not need hazah shlishi ushvi. So that would make sense based on this teaching of the Sifri Zuta that the mace asma inay tame.
Let's say the mace was touched by another mace. Let's say you have two maces that are touching.
It's going to be like the Chassam Sefer. Touch
it depends who gets up first.
No, so I'm saying, so now the mace is now Tommy itself.
Yeah, so
depends who wakes
up. It can't be Tommy.
I don't know. It's a good question. Good question, but that the Torah lists the things that are Makabal Tumah. In Adam, Oichlim Mashkim, Kalim are Makabal Tumah. And things that don't fall into that category are not Makabal Tumah. For that reason, if I'm not mistaken, a Baal Chai is not Makabal Tumah, meaning an animal. And it might be argued that the same thing is true for a mace. A mace is not Makabal Tumah.
Whoever comes back to life first.
If
I'm hugging, two dead people are touching each other.
Yes, and then if one comes back to life, then the mace will be Matami him. Right.
That is
the
said about touching himself.
The dead version touched the living version, right? But the Kabbalah's Tumah.
He was dead.
Yeah, no, but what he meant was, and therefore he's Makabal Tumah when he's alive.
Because he touched it, because it touched himself.
Right.
But he himself was dead at that time. So it's the same thing as this question.
That's Moshe Rabbeinu.
While he's dead, if he touches himself, it's the same thing as a mace touching a mace.
No, I think the Chassam Sefer is not saying that he was Matami himself by touching himself while he was dead. He was only saying that he was touching at the moment of transition back to life, he's touching himself.
He comes back to life.
At the fraction of a second.
Right. Yeah, I agree that's maybe a debatable. Yeah, could we really say if it's two different points in time? I don't know. Yeah,
does that come up nowadays with
bringing people resuscitating?
I mean, resuscitate. Yeah,
that's a very good Shaila. That's a very good Shaila. I think.
Clinically dead. And
meaning people are in a state that we would have once called dead.
If you had to shock someone back.
Right. Right, so people are in a state that we would have once called dead.
They're not halachically dead.
Right.
No, that's a good shaila. I think, but I'm sure that Poets can talk about that, but I'm not qualified to get involved in that. Okay, last. I wanna. just analyze this teaching of the Sefri a little bit. Again, it seems like a very cryptic idea that it's saying, almost like, you know, you can almost ask, Halidvarim Kalvachimer, like, how could it be that it's mitame everything else, and yet it itself is tahar? What do you make of that? So, just a thought. There is a chakira that one can wonder about tumah in general. Sort of this, I guess, the most basic question that one can ask about the whole topic of tumah. What is it? Is tumah a metzius, or is tumah a collection of dinim? Let's explain this a little better. What do I mean? Is tumah metzius? This is, I think, the way people conventionally think of it. That although it's invisible, because we can't see it with our physical eyes, but if we had the right kind of, maybe, you know, senses, we'd be able to see. But there's something there. When the Torah calls something tummy, the reason why it's tummy is because there's, let's call it a ruach tuma that's there. And then when we talk about things being metame one another, it's like transmitting something that was there. Just to give a mashal, the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, I think this is one of the most well-known examples of the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh at the beginning of Parshas Chukas. He's really coming to explain why there's a difference between Yisrael and Ovi Kachavim. But let's putting that part of it aside, he just, when he's explaining Tumah, he gives a mashal. He says, when you have food, meat, you know, that was very sweet and very geschmack, and then it's left out and it spoils, so then you'll see all the flies gathering around it, and right, and then the maggots. Something that, you know, but if you leave a table there, so that's, you can leave it there for a very, very long time, and that's not going to happen. So because of the Kedusha that was there, because of the Chaim, and then when the Chaim gets removed, so this, so he used that mushal of the maggots, and he says, and there's something similar in a ruchnistic way, that, and he calls it the klipas hatuma, that attach themselves. So then he's describing tumah as a thing, not something that we could see with, you know, with eyes that work with light, but there's a thing, and if we had the right kind of instruments, you know, in a ruch, based on ruchniistic materials, then we would be able to see it, because there's a real metzias called tumah. Now there's a different approach that, you know, theoretically one can say that when a person dies, there's nothing there. The Torah says that if you touch him, then you're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash. That's it. There's just a din that if you touch a mace, you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash. Just like there's a din.
It's the Hirsch approach.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just like, you know, so many other halachas in the Torah, right? We have a din that if an animal, let's say if you shecht an animal, then you're allowed to eat the meat. If the animal dies without shechit, you're not allowed to eat the meat. Is that because we assume that there's some metzias that attaches to the animal if it dies without the shechita rather than with the shechita, and it's because of that mitzias, that entity, that's what makes it not kosher? Now, maybe, it could be there are those that would say that, but over there, I think that's probably not the conventional approach, right? That's just a din that you're not allowed. Right? If a person, if a woman is an Eishes Ish, and then you give her a get, so now she's allowed to remarry, is that because something changed? There used to be like some kind of aura or a halo over her that made her usser, and now that got removed and it makes her mutter? Or no, there was just, she was usser, and the get makes her mutter. So along the same lines, you could say that when a person dies, or for that matter, any of the other tumas, a sheretz and a vela, tumas hayotzim and a guf, they create dinim. There's nothing but dinim. And the halacha is, the Torah doesn't want you to go into the Beis HaMikdash after you come into contact with the mace. That's what we call, that Ratzon HaTorah is what we call tumah. But not that there's a cheftza called tumah. Gzeiras HaKosov, right. You know, there is a lashon in the Rambam. I wouldn't say that it's necessarily compelling by any means. But the Rambam, the very last Rambam in Sefer Tara, it's the Rambam writes over there, he says that you shouldn't think that tumah is like tit or tzaya that could get washed off in the mikvah. Now, clearly that doesn't mean that it's not a metzias, right? That might just mean that it's not a physical metzias. And then he also, he has a lashon about the tara of a mikvah that something to the effect of that you shouldn't think that the waters of the mikvah are washing you. I don't remember his lashon, but something to that effect. Which also, again, it might just mean that it's, you know, that it's ruchni, sick things, it's not physical things. But that lashon of the Rambam, I think, might be taken to mean that you shouldn't think that there's any kind of a process of something being there and being washed away, but rather it's all just dinim. I wouldn't claim that from this Rambam you see that, but maybe there's a suggestion to that in this Rambam. I'll call upon him. If we assume that the Tumah is a metzias, then this Sifri Zuta is a Pella. How could it be that, you know, then you think, Aviyah Vaisatoma Mamish Pshuta Kimashmoi, right? That's the most tummy thing in the world. There's nothing more tummy than a dead body. The especially if you talk about all tuma as being transmitted from one thing to the other, how could I get it from the mace if the mace doesn't have it? This ruach, if the mace doesn't have it, then how could I get it by touching the mace? If I do get it by touching the mace, because the mace had it, that means, and that's what tuma is, having this ruach, this metzias, then what do you mean the mace is tahar? But if tuma is just dinim, then that is what the Sifri is saying. When it says, and again, a mace tame, the ain't a mace asked me tame, that's goof what it's coming to say. It's coming to say that you shouldn't think that it's a metzias. Hamez atzmei tahar, meaning, because since there are no dinim on a mace, why the mace is not allowed to eat truma, there's no dinim on a mace, there's just dinim on those that come into contact with him. So if tuma is just dinim, then tuma only exists on those that come into contact with the mace. But tuma doesn't exist in the mace because it's not relevant to the mace. Now, of course, you could ask that it would be relevant, legabe the ben shenamis, you know, what happens when he wakes up. Okay, so this Sifri Zuta wasn't getting involved in that kind of, in that kind of a mitzvah. That's a unusual case. But as far as regular hilchas tuma are negea to those that come into contact with the mace, not with the mace. If hilchas tuma is the whole tuma, then that's what it says in the Sifri. Hanegeya b'mase tamei ve'ena mase asmei tamei. So again, it's definitely different than the conventional understanding. We don't mean to say that this is necessarily a conclusive argument, but I would say this Sifri Zuta is suggestive, I think, of that idea. Okay.